From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The practice of redlining has been considered a historic one, symptomatic of our nation's racist past. It refers to how the Homeowners Loan Corporation in the 1930s drew lines around neighborhoods on maps that were racially mixed or consisted of a majority of people of color to systematically deny home loans. Well, the practice of redlining became widespread and fostered residential segregation within cities while undermining home ownership among families of color. Now, decades after the practice of redlining was banned by the passage of the 1968 Fair Housing Act, racial discrimination in housing loans persists, as per a new report by journalists at the Center for Investigative Reporting. The report is based on analysis of publicly available data made by the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act and includes a case study of the city of Philadelphia. My guest is Aaron Glantz, senior reporter at Reveal and the Center for Investigative Reporting, and lead author of the report co-written with Emmanuel Martinez entitled, For People of Color, Banks Are Shutting the Door to Home Ownership. Welcome to the program, Aaron.
It's good to be with you.
So first, let's talk about what the data was that you dug through and how you actually analyzed it. Because, of course, banks will claim that they do not discriminate against people of color. So we, of course, need to make sure that the analysis that you did of the data is robust and actually shows a real effect. What is the data and how did you analyze it?
Yeah, so we went through 31 million mortgage records, which was nearly every loan application filed in America in 2015 and 2016. And we focused in on conventional mortgage loans. These are the loans that banks give to people to help them buy homes, even when the government isn't backstopping or subsidizing the mortgage. And we looked to see where in America would it be the case that even if people of color made the same amount of money as whites, and even if they were trying to take out the same size loan as whites, and even if they were trying to buy in the same neighborhood as whites, then which would be the places where people of color would be more likely to be turned down? And when we looked at the data and we asked that question, we found there were 61 metropolitan areas across this country where people of color were substantially more likely to be turned away in both 2015 and 2016, even when they made as much money as their white counterparts.
So essentially, you corrected for all of those factors that banks and mortgage companies say explain why it might seem that people of color are getting turned down for home loans at higher rates, and you found that the effect persists.
Well, I mean, of course, when we took our findings to the big banks, they said, well, there's still more factors that you could have considered. For example, we didn't have access to the borrower's credit score data. We didn't have access to their overall debt to income ratio, which would be including not only the size of the home loan they were seeking, but also car loans, student loans, you know, other kinds of debts that they might have. The reason we didn't have that information is because the banks have been fighting for decades to keep it secret. And even after the Dodd-Frank Act was passed in the aftermath of the housing bust and mandated that they begin to report this data as part of the Home Mortgage Disclosure Act, they've been dragging their feet for 7 years and still haven't provided the data. So basically, the banks are saying that the one thing that we don't have access to because they've been fighting to keep it secret is the very thing that would explain all of these disparities that we're noting in our reporting.
How big is the effect? Can you give us some numbers as to how many people are impacted or the likelihood of somebody being denied a home loan based on the color of their skin?
Well, for example, we found that in Philadelphia, African-Americans were 2.7 times as likely as whites to be turned away for a conventional mortgage, even after we controlled for income and eight other economic and social factors. And we found the same thing in Detroit, St. Louis, San Antonio, Orlando. In California, we found in Salinas and Vallejo, in Tacoma, Washington, Santa Fe, New Mexico, all over the country, we found African-Americans, Latinos, or Asians, were way more likely to be turned away because of the color of their skin. And in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, we found all four of the ethnic groups we examined, African-Americans, Latinos, Asians, and Native Americans, were all more likely to be turned away on a conventional mortgage loan than their white counterparts, even when they made the same amount of money as whites.
And differences between the various racial groups are certain. Is one group more likely than others to be turned away? I'm guessing it's African-Americans.
It depends where you go. It depends where you go. You know, in Philadelphia, it was African-Americans. In Iowa City, we found that Latinos face the greatest disparity in America. And when the Associated Press, we partnered with the Associated Press on this story, when their local reporter in Iowa City looked at our data, they found there was a single big bank in Iowa City, Hills Bank, which was turning away a tremendous portion of Latinos. So that's another thing that we're actually really excited about with the story is we published this app, which you can see on our website, revealnews.org/redlining. And you can actually go and look in your neighborhood for every neighborhood in America, who's getting loans and who's not by race. And also you can go see in your city, which banks are denying the greatest proportion of people of color. And, you know, you mentioned at the outset that we, you know, our small team of reporters, we could only really concentrate on Philadelphia and dig deep in Philadelphia. We're really hoping that the audience, you know, goes and accesses the app and helps us understand what is happening in these other communities.
So what did you find in Philadelphia? It's one thing to see the numbers, but humanize the story for us. Give us a sense of what the impact is on a personal level to people trying to buy homes. I mean, home ownership in America is historically seen and has been seen as this, you know, marker of achievement as part of the American dream. And when people are systematically denied that, it really impacts so many things that are hard to ignore.
I think that the thing that really jumped out to me when we were on the ground at Philadelphia is the way that gentrification and this kind of redlining interact now in the 21st century. When the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968, when the Community Reinvestment Act was passed in 1977, those were periods of white flight. And so there were neighborhoods that got no loans at all. And we found that is still the case even now, that people of color neighborhoods all around the country where white buyers don't want to buy continue to be redlined. But the way that these banks are able to get away with this, and we saw this in Philadelphia, is that they pile up their loans in underserved communities to the white gentrifiers who are just coming to these communities. And so, because a lot of these laws about community investment are race neutral, and the effect that this has is that people who already live there really feel forced out. So, you know, I've always thought about the issue of gentrification, that especially in a city like Philadelphia, which is a homeowner city, it's not a renter city. It's a city where housing has historically been relatively affordable, and so even working class and even poor people own property. But when you see a neighborhood like Point Breeze, where we did a lot of our reporting in South Philadelphia, which is an 80% African-American neighborhood where the loans are almost exclusively going to whites. And even when African-Americans who already live there will try to refinance their homes on better terms or get a home equity line of credit to fix up their home or, you know, or try to do something to pass on a little bit of wealth to their family members, or pay for their kids' college tuition, you know, with their home equity and their rising property values, the banks turn them down. And so people can't maintain their homes and they get forced out. And I think when we talk about an issue like gentrification, it's often the existing residents of the neighborhood being pitted against the newcomers who are just looking for a place to live. And we have to ask ourselves, why is this gentrification dynamic so vicious and hurtful oftentimes for the area's existing residents? And one of the things that our reporting points to is really time to look at the banks and the other mortgage lenders and ask who they're helping and who they're saying no to.
So you mentioned earlier that you did show banks the data that you and the analysis of your data. Explain that a little bit more. Who did you talk to try to, you know, get responses to your findings? And what did they say?
Well, I approached the American Bankers Association, the Mortgage Bankers Association, which are the big industry trade groups. And then we also approached every single bank and mortgage lender that we named in our story. And so because the story is focused in Philadelphia, it was a lot of the big lenders there. So TD Bank, which markets itself as America's most convenient bank, it had 36 branches in Philadelphia, not a single one in a majority black neighborhood in a city that is basically equal parts white and black, and denied 2/3 of all conventional mortgage loan applications from African Americans and a majority of loan applications from Latinos. They wouldn't give us an interview. Santander Bank, which is another big East Coast bank, that denied a loan to this woman, Rochelle Faroul, who's an African American trying to buy in West Philly, and only gave her the loan after her white, extremely, or half white, half Japanese, extremely underemployed partner, whose last paycheck was only $144, when she came on, suddenly the loan happened. So they wouldn't talk to us. A couple of independent lenders, Philadelphia Mortgage Advisors and Trident Mortgage, which is part of Berkshire Hathaway, we approached them. They wouldn't talk to us. First Trust Bank, which is a small community bank in Point Breeze that lends almost entirely to whites, they wouldn't talk to us. So, you know, at the end of the day, after this months-long investigation, we could not get a single bank to go on the record and go on tape and talk, you know, and we told them. We're producing an hour for national radio, producing two segments for the PBS NewsHour. It never looks good when you speak through a statement. It looks like you have something to hide. And they said, oh, well, that's fine. We'll just present a statement. And the statement says, you know, we deny that we're being discriminatory and your investigation and analysis is incomplete.
Now, Aaron, do you... think there is a trend in one direction or another? And does the change in the administration at the federal level have anything to do with it? For example, since the Fair Housing Act was passed, were there reverses in the gap between homeownership between various racial groups? And are we seeing that gap increase or decrease?
Well, we basically saw this gap get much bigger under the presidency of Barack Obama. Huh. And the data that we looked at was from 2015 and 2016, because there's a little bit of a lag in the reporting of this data. So basically, all the discrimination or disparity that we're talking about right now is all based on our analysis of 2015-2016 mortgage data, which is when Obama was president.
Right, and it's probably too soon to look at the past year under Trump.
Yeah. Right, and I looked at, I interviewed his Obama's top bank regulator, his name is Tom Curry. When he was in charge of regulating banks for their community lending, he found 99% of them were doing an outstanding or satisfactory job. So this was not an area where there was a lot of aggressive activity under Obama. Now, Trump is there. Steve Mnuchin, his Treasury Secretary, run a bank called One West, one of the largest banks headquartered in Southern California. Over a five-year period, it helped only 3 African Americans and 11 Latinos buy homes. CEO of that bank, along with Mnuchin, was a guy named Joseph Otting, who is now the nation's top bank regulator under Trump. So he's the one carrying out these Community Reinvestment Act assessments. And his bank lent almost exclusively to white people when he was in charge. So we went from an era, I think, where the disparity was getting bigger, but maybe the people in charge might have taken action if they were called on the carpet, to an era where we really have the fox guarding the hen house.
Wow. So what do you think was the main reason why we saw this gap in homeownership increase under Barack Obama? I mean, do other factors play into this issue? For example, does the overall economic capability or economic health of, say, Black America also, of course, percolate into the ability to own a home?
Well, we tried to control for that, right? Mm. We looked and we controlled for income, for example. Right. We said, like, what if you make more money, right? Mm. Still, you're more likely to get turned down. Well, what if you're trying to take on a smaller loan? Sorry, you know, like, that doesn't really work either. Let's control for different types of neighborhoods. Well, that turns out not to have a big impact in these cities if you're a person of color. I do think that the housing bust had a lot to do with this. A lot of people of color were targeted for predatory loans during the boom and got wiped out during the bust, right? But what I wonder is, we've had a 95% increase in conventional mortgage lending since the bust, right? So credit is back. People are able to buy homes again. But it is a feature of the economic recovery that some of the old trends of redlining that we thought were in the rearview mirror are back with a vengeance.
Wow.
And, you know, we're just making note of that, you know. And a lot of the media is still trying to figure out what happened in the bust, you know, who was targeted for subprime loans, who was getting wrongfully foreclosed on. A lot of times in this country, people are still debating the last argument, right? The argument over what happened before. And we're saying, like, hey, let's not talk about what was happening before. Let's talk about what's happening right now in the economic recovery. And why are people being left behind? And could it be because old patterns of discrimination are reasserting themselves?
Right. Tell us about Rachelle Farrell, the woman in Philadelphia whose case you go to in great detail. I think it's important to understand, you know, she's a well-educated woman, makes a, you know, relatively decent salary, and was turned down for a home loan.
Well, I mean, I think that this is one thing that we learned in our reporting is that nobody is perfect, right? I mean, the bank always wants us to be perfect, right? They want 2 years of clean tax returns that show consistent income and a lot of money in the bank and a perfect credit score and low student loans. Like, they want all those things from everyone, but everyone has their blemishes. So Rachelle was this amazing woman. She went to Northwestern University. She grew up in Brooklyn, went to a boarding school on scholarship, went to Northwestern, joined the Peace Corps, came home, taught herself coding, and was teaching coding at Rutgers University, getting paid a good amount of money. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to try to buy a house. And one thing you have to understand about housing in Philly is that compared to a place like California, it is cheap. And it is usually the way the housing market works there. It's usually cheaper to actually buy a house than it is to rent.
Wow.
Rents
as a Californian, that is remarkable, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, so basically the rents are still pretty high. So you're looking at like $1,500 or $2,000 often to rent an apartment. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the price of purchasing a home in many of these same neighborhoods, you'd end up with a mortgage payment of $1,100 or $1,200, right?
Yeah.
So, and so, you know, she's making good salary. She found a home. She would have been paying less on her mortgage than she was paying in rent. So, you know, she could definitely afford it. And she was first turned down by this independent lender, Philadelphia Mortgage Advisors. And they were concerned that her income was not consistent enough because she was a contractor. So they turned her down. They said, your teaching job at Rutgers is on contract. We'd prefer if you have more consistent income. So they turned her down and she didn't give up. She went and got a job. She now works for the University of Pennsylvania, which is an Ivy League institution managing a $1 million grant. And then she's like, okay, I solved that problem. She tried again. She went to this big national bank called Santander. She tried to get a loan from them. They kind of jerked her around for months. In a way that many of us are familiar with, dealing with a big bureaucracy where they asked her for some of the same documentation over and over and over again. And then finally, there popped onto her credit report an electric bill from an apartment that she used to live in New York, where she didn't live in anymore. And she paid the bill right away, but it still—
So there was an unpaid electrical bill, okay.
Right. And she paid it right away, even though it wasn't even her house anymore. But it still sent her good credit score down about 50 points, and the bank said no, and she was going to give up. But then her partner, who she had just started dating a few months before, who was half white and half Japanese, said, hey, maybe I'll come on board. And partner Hanako was working part-time at a grocery store, and her biweekly paycheck was for only $144. But for some reason, the bank preferred her partner. Like, once her partner came on, everything went smoothly and she was able to buy the house.
So Rachelle Faroul, an African-American educated woman working at a Ivy League school, trying to get her second home loan, was turned down. Her partner, a half white, half Japanese woman earning just a few hundred dollars a week at a grocery store, comes on board, and suddenly the bank is happy to deal with them and ready to give them a loan?
Right. That's exactly what happened.
Wow.
That's exactly what happened. And we saw that over and over and over again, where, again, nobody is perfect. So, you know, about Rachelle's partner, Hanako, I mean, she's an educated woman. She had been a teacher before. She looked like she was about to land a new teaching job. And so they looked at Hanako and they saw all these positive things, right? They looked past her most recent pay stub, which was for $144. Wow. And they saw someone who, even though she didn't have a lot of savings or consistent income right at the moment, was like a good bet to give a loan to. Then they looked at Rachelle, who had all the same positive things in terms of education, upward mobility, and consistent income that Hanako had, and then she had other things that Hanako didn't have, right? And they looked on her quite negatively. So we saw that a lot in the gentrifying neighborhoods in Point Breeze, in South Philadelphia. One of the things that, you know, in the gentrification debate, people often say is, well, like, these wealthier people are coming in. But actually, when I interviewed a lot of the recent homeowners, they weren't that wealthy. You know, they were people who were doing adjunct teaching at two different universities, so they had inconsistent income, right? And they could be laid off at any time, but the lender found a way to look at them positively. There's another woman that we featured in our segment on the NewsHour who had been unemployed for 9 months and only recently found a new job. She was able to get a loan.
And so the distinction of these folks is that they were largely white, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they were all white.
All white, yeah.
They were all white. And so the loan officers, you know, pretty much anyone who's coming to the table with everything perfect is going to get the loan, right? But then you end up with people, like most of us, where we have imperfections. And it just seemed like the loan officers found a way to make it work when the imperfection was for a white person. But if the imperfection was for an African-American, they tended to use their imperfections as a reason to say no, or sometimes try to encourage them to apply for a government-backed loan product, which would have higher fees and put taxpayers at risk instead of the more traditional better deal conventional loan product.
So it's really interesting, this aspect of gentrification is such a critical one that we don't often look at discrimination in home loans, positive discrimination for white homeowners in so-called transitional neighborhoods, as a pressure point or push factor for fostering gentrification. That's a really interesting aspect of it. And you're right, we tend to, as you said earlier, we tend to demonize the people moving in who in many cases, you know, are trying to simply live at an affordable place. But the banks play a big role.
Yeah, who's financing it? Who's providing the money, right? There are people who, you know, make a good salary and need to live somewhere. The real question is, why are they turning down the other people who also want to live the American dream? Because if banks were behaving in a way that allowed everyone to benefit from the gentrification, then there wouldn't be this kind of divisive nature. I mean, we all want our neighborhoods to be improved. Why are certain people being left behind?
So, Aaron, what's next? You mentioned there's an app that people can find out about their own neighborhood, and you know, if they might be in the process of obtaining a home loan and they're people of color, they might be able to look at your story and sort of try to find out more about them. Give out the website again, and also any advice that you can give to potential homeowners who are people of color who've been turned down for home loans and were upset and shocked by it.
Well, I mean, the first thing I would say is, like, we're collecting stories. And if you go on to revealnews.org/redlining, if you've experienced anything, we definitely want to hear from you at revealnews.org/redlining. And that's also where you can see this app. And it's going to show you the lending patterns in every neighborhood in America. So you can just put in your address and find out which racial groups are getting loans and which are getting turned down in your neighborhood. And you can also look at the performance of individual banks in your city. So if you are looking to apply for a loan and you have some idea like, oh, I might want to go to Wells Fargo or JP Morgan Chase or a community bank or a mortgage lender, you can actually put that lender in your city and see how they stack up against other lenders in Los Angeles in terms of their propensity to deny people of color, their overall lending split between whites, blacks, Latinos, and Asians. And I think that that might be of some use to folks. You know, if you think going into a bank and you find out that they're the number one denier of African-Americans in your city, there might be another bank that performs a little bit better. Although we did find, you know, that the disparity is pretty pervasive and tends to operate in many cities, regardless of who the lender is.
Wow. Well, Aaron, we'll post a link to your article again. That's revealnews.org/redlining on our website later today. Good luck to you and thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Aaron Glantz, senior reporter at Reveal and the Center for Investigative Reporting. We've been discussing his new report, which is called For People of Color, Banks Are Shutting the Door to Home Ownership. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.